Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is the interview with Dr. Bessie Zhang on December 27, 1981. This is tape two by Sue Ellen Chen and Munson Kwok and Howard Kwan.
And I'd like to have your roommate. I presume he felt that my roommate, anyone that would be my roommate at Stanford, would be most acceptable. And she happened to be the head sponsor, because the director of the social life of the new girls that came.
That's right.
So out of 14 sponsors, she was the top gal that told the girls, you know, many of the girls went to small schools. Or came from girls' schools and didn't know about dating and what to wear, what to say, how to act. And so Doris was the head sponsor, and she was all excited. She heard about this Chinese girl. There's going to be a Chinese girl at Stanford. So she went to Dean Yost and said, "Dean Yost, if it's all right with you, I would love to have the sight unseen, poor girl, of pig in a poke." I could have been the homeliest person, the most nasty person to live with in the world. But she asked if she could have the privilege of rooming with this Oriental girl. She thought it would help enlarge and improve her life and give her a broader outlook.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And to think I got such a break.
Yeah.
And then I got rushed for the sororities.
Oh.
And when I was in Washington, I said to Doris, "Now, Doris, did you and the girls and the sororities mean it, or were they doing it to be polite?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "No, we meant it."
Did you join one?
Oh, no. I just went along with about three quarters of the way. When the serious part came, I declined the invitations because I knew I couldn't keep up with the Joneses.
It costs a lot of money, I guess.
To dress properly and do the right things, I couldn't do that. And then I was working.
Oh, dear.
I was
at university, you were also working.
I had the laundry agency and the cleaning agency.
On campus?
On campus. At Robley.
Robley. Yes.
But not enterprising, because I fortunately was well liked by the house mother. Mrs. Stearns and her assistant.
Uh-huh.
And they felt that I should have it because I was the neediest.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of having to be a waitress or a bus girl, and many of the boys were bus boys, they gave me a nice clean job. I didn't handle any of the dirty cleaning or the dirty clothes. The girls just put it in that room where everybody dumps their things and put their name on it. When it came back, my job was only to collect the money.
Oh,
that's very good.
And I got 20%.
Gee, that's marvelous.
So that helped a lot. And then I babysat David Nightstar Jordan's child, the grandchildren of the first president, and worked for Professor Treat. And in San Francisco, I worked for the doctors Kilgore and different persons. And I used to, and that didn't hurt me at all socially, because they would come and pick me up, and I would serve, and the Lux training came in handy again.
Yes, the baby
I knew
care,
how to serve.
Oh,
I knew how
right.
to make the gravy, make the biscuits.
Place settings.
Everything. But the woman, the lady of the house, would have the table set, and the glasses ready for the ice water. And I'd put out the butter and pour the ice water, make the biscuits and the gravy, and while she would dress for her guests. And for that I would get $3.50. But in time, that was good money.
Certainly was.
And I'd clean up and wash the dishes, and they'd take me home.
So you were able to...
I was able to do this, and nobody was any the wiser.
Right.
And keep up with your studies.
And keep up with my studies.
And you were able to support yourself all the way through the college.
I only had $425 saved. But what made me do that was the nice lady, a Christian, Protestant lady, very religious, Scotch woman, and her husband was the treasurer of the Standard Oil of California. An old gentleman of the old school with a proper mustache and had a special waiter at the Stewart Hotel in San Francisco.
Yes.
You know, the old school. Everything was just so. So Mrs. Gilchrist, in order to be a good Christian and let her neighbors know that she is a good Christian and lives a proper Christian life, must see that the girl that worked for her go to church on Sundays. That was the most horrendous day of my week, you know. I'd have to get up earlier on Sunday to get that chicken ready for chicken fricassee. And that would be prepared in the fireless cooker. Did you ever hear of a thing like that?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
what was that?
That's what the way it was done. She had to get me to church, and yet they had to have their Sunday dinner when they came home from church. So I'd have to have the salad and the vegetable ready, and the table set, and the chicken in the fireless cooker. It would have a composition thing. I don't know whether it was cement or asbestos or what, but we'd put it on the gas burner and heat it.
It
up to a certain heat, and it would absorb all that heat. And the fireless cooker was so built that none of that heat would escape. And then the lid was put on with springs or claps that were very hard, and it would be kept stewing at a moderate temperature and be all well cooked, like in a microwave by the time we got home from church. But you can see what a day Sunday was for me.
Oh my.
I had to get up earlier to get the vegetables and the table set and the vegetables ready and the salad ready. In fact, everything ready, and get that chicken fricassee into the fireless cooker and get dressed for church. Oh, was it ever a rush?
When did you get involved with Christianity then? Because it sounds like you became quite devout or interested in it.
Oh, my Christianity came after my sister died. I mean, I was baptized after my sister died at the Presbyterian Church. I think it's 925 or 695 Stockton Street, you know, the Chinese Presbyterian Church.
So it's when you came back to San Francisco.
But when my sister died, I thought, oh my goodness, if God is such a dear and loving Father, how could he take away my sister? You know, I just simply cried out against God and said, oh, this is terrible. But it was the best thing in the world for me, because I was the only link between my sister and her family.
I see.
There was no one left but herself in the country when my father and mother and
brother
and everybody went.
Right.
And she was only too happy to ask her new husband if she could have her little sister to keep her company.
Right.
So that's how I was lucky enough to get to Siskiyou County and live with them for that period of time.
But even though
you were felt like God had done something badly, yet you felt that Christianity was...
At first, when she died, and I couldn't understand it, I thought, oh, how could you be a loving God and take her away and leave me, you know, destitute, at the mercy of my brother-in-law, who was a pretty hard taskmaster.
I would guess from the things you've been saying by inference.
Yes, he was. And he wasn't a Christian. And he came up the hard way.
Yes.
So naturally, he would be very firm and not permitting me to go to school and all. Because if he kept me from school, why, he'd have another pair of hands to wait on the tables and so on. So to let me go to school meant a sacrifice. And then I have a scar here. See that scar?
Uh-huh.
Oh, hardly.
Yeah.
He was a believer in the Chinese herbs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And evidently I had what we used to call a quinsy sore throat.
Uh-huh.
The sore throat where all the tissues swelled and you almost choked to death.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you had some drug, or I guess before the antibiotics and before the sulfonamines.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't know what I guess they swabbed the throat, that was it.
Yeah,
with
I
some
guess I've
antiseptic
heard about that.
Uh-huh.
And gargles.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes.
And so my sister had me try all those things and it didn't help. My brother-in-law started in with the herb powder.
Uh-huh.
And all night long he blew in the herb powder. Through a butt tongue. You know what a butt tongue is?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, do you write Chinese?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's the cap
yeah,
that
right.
fits
cap.
Over
mm-hmm,
the brush.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And he used the butt tongue and blew in the powder on my tonsils.
Oh.
But all night long it kept swelling worse. And by morning, well, he saw that I wasn't doing so good. And I began to turn blue.
Oh.
And he thought, oh my goodness, what'll I say to her father if she dies? So he immediately called Dr. Thompson, who was the only doctor in the town. And Thompson came and took out a pocket knife. He didn't have any time to even wipe it off. I was dying.
Yeah.
And he plunged the knife in there. But actually, tracheotomy should be lower,
uh-huh.
right here in the trachea.
I see.
He did it above, a little bit above the trachea. But that saved my life.
My heavens, as close as that.
Yes. So as I say, I think God had a hand
mm-hmm.
in my life, because how would a little girl be able to say to its parent, I'm not going,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
get away with it?
Mm-hmm. So how did you get
so
into
So when
that
I was 14 and summoned my brother and father to the cousin's home where he placed me until he was ready to sail.
Yeah.
The next day,
uh-huh.
He said to me in Sayapwa,
uh-huh.
I give you the heavens for courage
uh-huh.
if you say you're leaving and you're not going.
Uh-huh.
I dare you try not to go.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So very first thing in the morning, I got dressed and went out and found 920 Sacramento Street.
They didn't stop you, or they didn't know that you left?
They didn't know I left, because they weren't living there.
I
they
see.
Were in a men's rooming house
oh.
with relatives.
I see.
And I was with a cousin,
uh-huh.
my Jokman,
yeah.
Jokpo, the man that had to do with the Samoa.
Is that right? Oh.
With his daughters.
I see.
And I went up to Miss Cameron's and staged probably the first sit-down strike in Chinatown. I went early and wouldn't leave. And finally...
Did they let you in right away?
No,
Cameron's place?
No, that's the whole point. Miss Wu was away, but another interpreter, Chinese woman, told her, hey, this girl doesn't want to leave. We've told her you can't do anything for her because she's a legitimate daughter. She's been fed. She has not been abused.
No.
And they promised her schooling in Hong Kong. And how we can't legally keep her at all. She's not of age.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? She won't leave. So fine. And Miss Cameron was very busy. But I guess in the back of her head, she thought, well, what shall I do with this girl that's so stubborn?
Mm-hmm.
This thing like the lump on a log that won't move. And finally, late in the afternoon...
Oh, he speaks pretty good English, too, at that time.
Oh, well,
so
that's all I spoke outside of Sayap Chinese. I didn't need to speak
so
Cantonese
entirely,
Chinese.
Been entirely different to them because of that.
Mm-hmm. And so she thought, well, I'll write her a letter to the American consul in Hong Kong and state that this girl does not want to go to the village and does not wish to be married.
Yes.
And they came and told me that. I said, oh no, that wouldn't do. They were going to take me to the village.
Uh-huh.
And when I'm in the Heung Ha,
uh-huh.
you know, in hinterland. What good would a letter to the American consul in Hong Kong do me?
Mm-hmm. Means nothing.
So I thought, oh no, that would be too dangerous. Oh no, I don't want the letter. So Miss Cameron didn't know what to do. She said, well, I better go to my wise old friend, Judge Muraski, at the juvenile court. And we went. And the judge said, Miss Cameron, when did you say her father's sailing for China? And she said, tomorrow at noon. And he said, well, we can finesse it. You know, like in playing bridge. Take a chance.
Uh-huh.
Her father, because she's a daughter, isn't going to stop everything and cancel the whole trip and maybe lose his money for the passages, you know.
Right.
And break up all his plans because of one little girl.
Mm-hmm.
One female, so to speak. And maybe we can just do that. And I'll appoint you her legal guardian.
Mm-hmm.
So Miss Cameron was appointed my legal guardian. We just took a chance. And I was in Miss Cameron's bedroom, which faces the streetcar that runs up Sacramento Street. There used to be one in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw my brother on that car looking for me.
Oh.
And I hid under the bed. He couldn't see me, of course.
Right, no.
But I was so guilty
scared.
And so frightened, I hid under the bed. And finally, I phoned them and told them that I'm going to stay, and Miss Cameron's going to be my guardian, and I'm going to stay at this place. Then my father couldn't do much about it, and he simply said, well, kauke name, sadlai, the name of germ and the family name, I'll permit you to stay.
He did. He gave the permission for you.
Well, he had to.
Uh-huh.
He had no choice. Miss Cameron had... The judge had allowed Miss Cameron to keep me. He didn't have any time to do anything about it.
Uh-huh.
So that's what saved my neck.
Wow.
But as you say, later on his other trips, he did come and see you?
Oh, yes.
And you got along?
Oh, yes, he saw some. He came to visit my older sister and myself and my brother. My brother was up there a few years with me.
I see.
And he forgave me for staying. But he didn't know about my going into medicine or any of that. So he died before I graduated from Stanford.
Oh, I see.
He died without knowing that I got the degree.
Oh.
And then my mother died before I married Chan Ling Si.
Uh-huh.
She didn't know who I married because they were so eager to see that I was married.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because that's a parental duty.
Mm-hmm.
A Chinese tradition, you must see that your children are secure for life before you leave this life.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you communicate with them, writing letters to them?
No, I didn't know how to write Chinese.
Chinese.
I only had 3 grades in Chinese, 1 hour a day for 8 months.
That
before
was in
I went
Francisco.
To high school.
That was after you returned back?
No, after I entered Miss Cameron's institution.
I see.
Require Chinese instruction?
No, all students? The girls had Chinese instruction.
Oh.
Oh, that's very good. That's good.
And so you
But I had all the privileges that the other girls didn't have because I had no men enemies on the outside.
That's true.
I see.
You can go
there
out.
Were no Tong men after me or any former owner after me or anything like that.
But
so I was free to come and go to school.
She provided opportunities as much as she could, though,
for
the other girls.
Oh, she opened doors for me. Otherwise, I'd never be where I was.
How about the other girls? Did she do likewise as much as she could? Or?
Well, there were very few. I can't think of any other girls. My case was sort of unique.
She was your guardian.
Because, you see, I was a legitimate daughter of legitimate parents. And the parents had done no wrong.
That's right.
Right.
And I had not been an abused child.
Right.
So it was just on a chance that I was able to make that.
Yes.
The other girls probably wouldn't have as much chance as you had.
Oh, no, they couldn't because they were afraid to go out. They may be snatched back by their owners. The owners had lost, if you've read that book, you know, they paid thousands of dollars.
But they had to go to school, the girls.
Oh, naturally. Miss Cameron wanted them in school and trained in something.
They were educated mostly in the house.
Right there in that house.
And they were highly escorted, so they were protected.
Oh, they had to be protected at all times. Even going to church, there was one or two of the elders of the church that brought up the rear. And Miss Cameron.
Just around the corner.
Just around the corner. But Miss Cameron, or one of her leading assistants, would lead the flock. And then they were watched so that there would be no violence.
Did it get to a point that you had some of those responsibilities to help?
Oh, yes, I helped a great deal. I took them to the venereal disease clinics.
I see.
And helped them. And I even helped the newcomers from China because I could speak Seyavwa, and the girls in the home couldn't. And I used to, besides working after school, would volunteer to go and help the newcomers with the English.
So you also worked as a translator, did you?
No. In the jail. Uh-huh. I went to San Quentin with one of the very religious workers to give tracts and give testimony to the Chinese prisoners in San Quentin. And when the Chinese prisoners saw me, the Chinese girl in the jail, they really paid attention and smiled and were so happy to listen, to hear Chinese spoken again.
I see. Did you ever go to Angel Island doing the same
thing? Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
How many times? Quite often? Or?
Whenever I had the opportunity, the time. Because I work every vacation.
So you work different kind of
jobs. I worked at Shanghai Bazaar.
You
know, right across from the Canton Bazaar in Grand Avenue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, and you worked outside.
And then I also worked at Miss Clay's, which is a competitor of Gump's. And I learned to make many very beautiful Chinese gifts and things. And so then at Lux, I learned so much in sewing and making a fancy decorations for hats and all, that I was able to substitute off and on at 9:20 when they didn't have a teacher for the industrial department.
Oh.
And my first year in medicine, Miss Cameron came and said, "Vissy, I know you're homesick, and we need very, very much to have someone take over, and we'd like you to come back if you're homesick and take over," because that was teaching them crochet, knitting, sewing, embroidery, and making small things of the annual bazaar. Every year there was an annual bazaar, and that bazaar brought in a little money for the girls that had no one to give them any money, and they were not free to go out and work like I could. See, I had no one after me, so it was safe for me to go out and work, but not safe for them.
That's right. I guess that's right.
How many years did you stay in Cameron House?
Well, I was in the sixth grade, I think, when I came, and it only had the eighth grade. And then I went through the 2 years and 4 years of high school, 6 years at Cameron House.
I see. And then you went to San Mateo College.
Then I went to San Mateo JC because that was inexpensive. It didn't cost me anything.
I see. And then after that, you went to Stanford for 2 years.
And no, then I worked at Mrs. Gilchrist's, the treasurer at Standard.
Before Stanford?
Before going to Stanford. So all I could manage, I earned $20 a month for doing all the cooking and the ironing and washing all the dishes. And life just looked like one big dishpan to me for ages.
When did you get inspired to go into medicine?
Oh, long before I went to high school.
Is that right?
Yes, before my
childhood dedication.
Before May's mother was dead, we talked about it. Oh, I'm very young. I realized China was overpopulated, and that I didn't need to go to China and have children. So, for some reason, I seemed to know that China needed someone to help the people. And I didn't like the idea of just being a preaching person, but I wanted to do something constructive. And we thought of medicine as a medical missionary would be good.
You yourself.
My sister
came
and
up,
I.
Oh, your sister and you were discussing.
My sister had gotten acquainted with Deaconess Grant of the Chinese Episcopal Church before she was married. So she learned to sing a few gospel hymns and different things like that.
I see. So how did you get into Philadelphia at the medical school? You went there, right?
No, Miss Cameron and Mrs. Wright, whose father established the first mortuary in San Francisco. Mrs. Wright heard about me, and I did so well in high school that she felt that I had potential, and she knew that I wanted to be a doctor and a missionary. And she was the president of the Board of Foreign Missions. And she was the one that Mrs. Pinney, another ex-president of the board, got together. And Mrs. Pinney didn't have as much money. But the N. Gray and Company of San Francisco, of course, you know, morticians always have money.
Yeah.
We never escape
them.
They
seem to do pretty well, yes.
Most of that,
although they have the Neptune Society now.
Oh,
and
yes,
I talked
right.
to her grandson just before I went to Los Angeles. And he said, you know, I am a little busy. And I'd love to see those letters from my grandmother to you. And I said, I'll try to ferret them out. I have them somewhere. And they had the second bathtub in San Francisco. Imagine that many long years ago.
Oh my. So but they sort of encourage you to enter the medical school?
No, I took the pre-medical course at Stanford. And at the same time, I majored in biology. So that if I did not have sufficient funds to finish medical, I could at least go to China and teach biology. So I graduated from Stanford as a pre-med and biology student and got my bachelor's degree in
biology. And at that time, not many women actually majoring pre-med or biology. Was
no,
that
no.
True?
Oh, the boys used to gang up on us and wouldn't let us use the equipment in physics and chemistry. There would be only so many sets, and they'd between them, you know, on their own grapevine, would say, well, when we're through, we'll hand it to you. So Mary Catherine, who was a graduate nurse, Mary Catherine and I would have to go down in the dark at night and do our experiments at Stanford.
Right.
Oh, dear.
It was that bad, even then, in the 20s.
Most of the women would take up other subjects.
Well, but you see, even as a child, I found boys games much more challenging.
Including the study of medicine.
Well, that's a man's game.
It was then.
It was
sure.
then.
Yeah.
It still is now.
Is that so?
Although my granddaughter is a Yale medical graduate and is specializing in ear, nose, and throat now.
Oh.
And Bessie, how did you have to come down? You finished medical school in Philadelphia? Is that when you came down to Los Angeles? To intern here at the General Hospital?
General Hospital.
Well, I'll tell you why. That brings a very interesting point. See, being brought up as an American and believing in democracy, I felt that we should live democracy as well as believing in it. So I was very busy socially in medical school as I was at Stanford. And I didn't get to, didn't even think of applying for my internship as early as some of my classmates. See, I felt that another reason I didn't join the sorority was, besides the money and the clothes and all, was because I felt it was not democratic. See, I was a very idealistic child. And then when I went to medical school, I was rushed to join the medical frat, the girls' fraternity. And I refused the first year. I wouldn't go. But the second year, they rushed me again. And they seldom do that.
Uh-huh.
If they rush you 1 year, you turn them down, they don't do it. But fortunately for me, I had enough friends in the frat that wanted me in. So I got a second rush.
Mm.
And so then I didn't join until my sophomore year.
Uh-huh.
And the pin cost me $30, and $30 was a lot of money in the 20s.
Uh-huh.
Each pearl around the pin was a dollar, a real pearl, you know, besides the price of the pin.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, there were two